Welcome, welcome, and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this special program on the President's Day. Yes, the President's Day. It's Rob Gary here. Yes, we live. I don't know how many other people will be doing a show on President's Day. Seems like everybody took off. Seems like everybody took off. The debate Saturday, and of course, the death of Scalia was all covered by B teams. It was all covered by the B teams. So I don't know if B team is back today. So far this morning, I'm noticing on at least MSNBC and CNN, they have the B teams going. I'm not sure about Fox, but I know CNN and MSNBC has B teams. So who knows? Who knows? But you want to talk about a crazy weekend. That's what this was. It was a crazy weekend in politics, from the debates, if you want to call them the debates. To me, it was like a death match. Yes, it was a death match. It was a barbed wire. I kid you not. I got to imagine anybody who listens to this show tuned into the debate Saturday. I got to imagine that. That's why I don't play a lot of clips on the show. I do play some, but I'm not one of those programs that are just filled with clips. Because I think you guys have heard the clips. I think you guys have seen the things that we're talking about. Once in a while, I'll bust out a clip when Carrie's apologizing and thanking Iran for giving us back our soldiers. But for the most part, I don't have a ton of clips. Saturday was a death match. It was barbed wire. It was fluorescent light bulbs. It was thumbtacks. It was flaming tables. It was the craziest debate that I've ever seen. And it's not just in what the candidates were doing, but the audience, the network, everything was so insane. Like I've said this before, what Trump has done is basically exposed everybody. He really has. He's exposed the establishment, the Washington pundits. He's exposed the politicians. He's exposed the networks. He's exposed the print media. He's exposed the internet media. He's exposed everybody. Literally exposed everybody. And everyone has basically showed where they stand as far as their politics go and their views on things. He really has. I mean, people that have normally been somewhat impartial, I guess you could call it that, or at least they didn't wear their emotions on their sleeves. So some days you went, wonder where they stand. Other days you went, I think they stand for this. But I get it. They're a news anchor or they're a network. I get it. There was always that, well, the media is liberal, or this person is liberal, or this person is a conservative, but they've never come out and said it. Like I told you, politics, even aspects of the media operate at a different level. They operate at a different level that we all know guilt and innocence to operate. I've said this countless times. If we break the law, if we commit a crime, we can go to jail on circumstantial evidence. We literally can go to prison on circumstantial evidence. But when it comes to politics, when it comes to the media, when it comes to anything involving those two things, separate or together, unless there's a videotape, literally, unless there's a videotape and unless there's a consensus amongst 50 or 60 people along with the videotape, it didn't exist. It didn't happen. It's not what we all saw. So we've known about bias when it comes to the media and who's liberal and who's not and what networks are and the executives and who works for campaigns. But because nothing was out in the open, or you didn't have videotape, or you didn't have documents, people denied it existed. And everybody went along with it. You said, I think that person has a liberal bias. No. Oh, okay. And so what Trump did, because everybody hates him, everybody in the media hates him, everybody in politics as far as pundits and as far as donors and as far as broadcast, they all hate him. And because he's doing good, because he's winning, because there's millions and millions and millions and millions of people following his message, all these pundits and media types are just throwing their cloaks out the window because they're obsessed with stopping him. They literally are obsessed with stopping him. So they're like, I don't care if everybody knows I'm liberal. I don't care. I have to stop Donald Trump. I have to stop him. Republicans are like, I don't care if people realize that I am in the tank for Marco Rubio. I have to stop Donald Trump. I have to. I have to. I don't care if people think that I'm not a real Republican. I have to stop Donald Trump. I mean, the debate was, it was seriously a death match. It exposed so many people, exposed so many things. Pundits, the different print media. I mean, it was insane. And I want to cover it, and I know it's going to be really, 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 really long and detailed, and I have so many different concepts of what is happening. I guess you could call it the concepts of what is happening. Different scenarios, different people, different feelings that people have, and what it means. So it's going to be kind of long. It'll probably take up most of the program, but I want to at least get to the other shock and awe, and that is Justice Antonin Scalia dying. Yes, Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia dying. Now, that was huge. It was huge. It happened Saturday. afternoon. It was huge. I was actually doing work, doing some show things, getting ready for the debate, and on my Twitter. So it's amazing. It's amazing at the information that comes through Twitter and the fact that you can get news quicker than the news on television, because somebody, and when I say somebody, not just some Yahoo out of the blue, but a newscaster from Texas tweeted out the story of Scalia being found dead from a local Texas newspaper. So that started to make its rounds. And when I seen it, I was shocked. Oh, my gosh. And I instantly put on MSNBC, CNN, and Fox. And they were all talking about the debate, or they were talking about global warming, or in MSNBC's case, lockup might have been caught on tape. It caught on video. Not sure which one. So I'm watching the tickers, and it's not on any of the tickers. It's not on breaking news, because that's something you would break into lockup to say, hey, the longest serving member of the Supreme Court is just found dead. With 10 months to go in President Obama's term, a vacancy has just come up, but nothing. Nothing. And I'm thinking, is it a hoax? Because, again, it's the internet. We get hoaxes all the time. Hoaxes are all over the internet. So I'm just staring at it. And staring. And staring. And staring. And staring some more. And staring. And then it starts being retweeted by like Ann Coulter and other people. So I said, this has got to be real. The article's got to be real. It's got to be legit. And then probably within 5 minutes, one after another, whether it was CNN, Fox, MSNBC, broke in with shocking news that Anthony Scalia was found dead. You know, and I'm not saying I called it. That's not what I'm saying. But about 9 months ago on this show, we actually did a segment about the Supreme Court justices, because it was at the height of the gay marriage arguments. It was during the time that the Supreme Court was hearing the Obamacare, all these cases, and we broke down ages. Rather, it was Ginsburg with the cancer and, just generally being extremely old and close to death. I mean, go figure. Scalia dies and Ginsburg is still going strong. But we broke down, Ginsburg, Kennedy, Scalia, and we talked about how these guys would be in their, mid to late 80s come the next president. And the court was going to change. Regardless, the court was going to change. Scalia was 79. So if he didn't die, then he kept chugging along. He could be 88 years old, presumably, when the next president was in power and on his second term. But it didn't happen. He died. Now, there's a bunch of different ways Republicans can go with this. And, you know, the debate stage, this was the first topic that was brought up. I mean, it was huge. And I was talking with my girlfriend about this, and I was explaining to her why this is so big. And I had to break down justice for justice, because she said, we've had vacancies before. We've had appointments before. Why is this one so big? And I told her, I said, well, we haven't had a chance, whether it's Republican or Democrat, to change the makeup of the court in a very long time. I told her, I said, when you're swapping one judge out for another, you get a huge resistance. I go, of course it happens. They all get a resistance. It's all a big, you know, game. It's all big political theater. But when it's Democrat for Democrat, the theater eventually ends and the person gets nominated, unless they are so extreme, unless they are so over-the-top extreme. But with Sotomayor and Kagan, they were basically swap-outs. So you have a Democrat as the president. You basically have a liberal judge. And that liberal judge is replacing another liberal judge. So everybody goes, rah, 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 but eventually, okay, confirmed. This is the first time in a long, long time where you have a Democrat or Republican. In our case, we are now in a Democrat term. So we have a Democrat president, and the vacancy on the Supreme Court is that of a Republican. And now this Democrat, this liberal, can now change the makeup of the court. That's huge. That's huge. Because remember, right now, you basically, they say you have a 5-4, well, you did when Scalia was alive. You had a 5-4 conservative-leaning court. Now, listen, if it's not going to be a conservative, I argue that point, and let me explain to you. I argue that point. If the court doesn't lean conservative on conservative issues, it's not a conservative-leaning court. I mean, really not. And on two big issues like Obamacare and gay marriage, the court didn't go conservative. It's just facts. Court didn't go conservative. Sorry, but the court didn't go conservative. So Kennedy is way more swing than he is a staunch conservative. Again, staunch conservative, you would not have the gay marriage ruling, and we would be free of Obamacare. But no sense of re-litigating those things. So right now, the court is made up of basically four uber liberals, three uber conservatives, and one swing vote. One maybe conservative, maybe liberal. Now, Scalia was the most conservative. He was the person that really followed law on that Constitution and what the framers, what the creators intended it to be. His whole concept was not to change law based on where society is. He was strict. And that's what made him a great Supreme Court justice. Now, here's the battle. And seriously, it can go so many ways. And at the debate, who is it? Scott Paley? Is that his name? Scott Paley, the CBS moderator. He, of course, asked the question. Some, he framed it differently, but he asked all the candidates what they think should happen as far as appointing a new justice. And he asked Donald Trump, do you think, see, he asked Trump a different phrasing of the question. He asked Trump, he said, do you think President Obama should appoint a new justice, and what do you think should happen? And I thought Trump had a great answer. And he said, well, doesn't matter what I think, it's a matter of what he will do. And he said, if it was the other way around, the Republicans would do it. Again, the thing with Trump is, he's playing a totally different political game than everybody else. And they can't take it. They really can't take it. And it was such a great, honest answer. Because let's face it, what we Republicans are jumping up and down screaming about now would not be the case if this was President Romney and Ruth Bader Ginsburg just died. We all would be saying it's a constitutional duty of the president to nominate. We cannot go 10 months with just 8 justices. We Republicans would be bitching up a storm. So when Trump says these things, it's A, very refreshing, and B, very, very confusing for the establishment, for the Republican establishment, because they're not used to somebody actually saying the truth as far as politics and procedure and the way things should be done. Now, the question is this, and this is what I would pose to my Republican friends. Do we really feel that we have the presidency locked up? Do we really feel that we have the presidency locked up? That we will take a chance and maneuver and wait until we take the White House, and then we can appoint whoever we want, because we have the 54-vote majority to get our nominee through. Even though Ted Cruz is talking about using the filibuster, which everybody agreed as far as Senate official, unofficial rules should not be used as far as the Supreme Court. But that's regardless. Again, it's always the tricky thing when people want to start changing rules because one group is in power. Because should that group lose power, they will be quick. They will be quick. They will be real quick to do exactly what you just did. But again, neither here nor there, put that aside. Are we that confident that we are going to get the White House, that we will risk not having a say now, or I should say, not having a say then and having a say now? Because remember, if we put our feet down and say, we don't care who you give us, they're not getting a vote. Remember when Scalia died, his body wasn't even cold yet. And my Republican friends were tweeting up a storm, telling Obama and the administration, forget it, forget it. Whoever you bring us, we are denying it. We are denying it, which is kind of silly. It's kind of silly. What if he brought us the most conservative justice there was? So it's kind of silly. So the question is, are we that confident? Now, remember, conservatives have brought us to where we are with Obama. Remember, these conservatives, whether it's midterms, runoffs, they tell us, if you elect us, we will fight every single one of Obama's initiatives. We will crush him. We will destroy him. We will annihilate him. And the voters go, okay. And then the conservative gets into office and they basically do nothing. They go against everything that they told all of us that they were going to do. It's happened time and again. Time and again. Sometimes it's you can't even count. Rather, it's amnesty, Obamacare, even that horrible budget. The list goes on and on. Now, if a Democrat, if Hillary Clinton wins, she will get through anybody she wants. Anybody she wants. Hell, you might have Supreme Court Justice Huma Abedin. She will get through anybody she wants. Because remember, right now, Republicans control the Senate. Yes. Right now, you have a 54-44 split with two independents. And the two independents, one of them being Crazy Bernie. I'm not sure which is the other independent, but both of those independents normally caucus with the Democrats, or at least vote with the Democrats. Say you're looking at a 54-46. Yeah, you're talking about, what, 8 seats? There's more than that that are up in the 2016 presidential election. There's more than that. I think there might be somewhere upwards of 14 seats that are up. And there's about 8 or 9 that are close. I mean, there's a possibility the Democrats could take back the Senate. So it's not just rolling the dice that there's going to be President Ted Cruz. It's not just rolling the dice that it's going to be President Marco Rubio. You got to roll the dice that it's going to be President Ted Cruz and keeping the Senate. We get a Supreme Court justice that is just like Scalia. Or the alternate is doing something that conservatives have failed to do. President Obama has failed to do. And that's negotiating. Negotiating. And everybody getting in a room and actually negotiating this nominee. I think there's too much to risk. Now, again, these are observations. These are opinions. Me, myself, I think there's too much to risk. Too much to risk in shutting down this whole process. And we haven't even touched on voters. We haven't even touched on the whole look. The whole look to voters in a extremely tight, soon-to-be presidential race. A 9-month or 10-month temper tantrum, doing exactly what we say Obama does with the executive order. I think there's too much to risk in that being a 10-month temper tantrum, saying, doesn't matter who you give us, doesn't matter if you give us Jesus himself, F you, and listening to not just Democrats, but the media. Remember, my Republican friends, we are constantly fighting the media. And if you're a Trump supporter, you're fighting Fox. So now we will be fighting the media. And that word, obstructionist. And listening to the media say, they started Obama's term. They started his first year in office as saying, nothing you do will get by. We will fight you. We will obstruct you. Even though that was never the case, but we'll at least say it. Mitch McConnell will at least say it. John Boehner will at least say it. Paul Ryan will at least say it. And the media will say they started and they're ending. We won't appoint anybody. It doesn't matter if it's Jesus himself. We're not doing anything. F you. And now the media piles on. And just piles. And we all know Mitch McConnell. We all know the Boehners. We all know these people. We all know what happens. Cave. Lindsey Graham. McCain. So instead of doing all of this, and again, even rolling the dice and saying, oh, man, we win the presidency, we keep the Senate, then we get to pick our nominee, our Supreme Court justice. I think that is a huge gamble. Stalling for 10 months is a huge gamble. I shouldn't say stalling. Stalling would be giving us a nominee, having the nominee go through the process, and running out the clock. Which is a good option to do. It's a good option to do it. At least splits the difference. Because if we say to the president, F you, doesn't matter if Jesus, we are now fighting everybody. We are literally in a circular crossfire. But if we don't negotiate and get somebody that we're all right with, and we say, go for it, give us a nominee, and we go through the process, but it just runs out of time, or the vote fails to pass, we win half the battle. We win half the battle. We win the media battle. We win the public battle. We don't have to listen to celebrities who control the media. Let's face it. We don't have to listen to every late night talk show. Because we're doing what we're supposed to do. We're going through the process. Lose the vote. Or the clock ran out. Now we won half the battle. Now we just have to win the White House and keep the Senate. Now that's the most logical scenario, I think. The other scenario would be getting together, sitting in the White House, and saying to the president, we will give you a Supreme Court nominee, but this is what we want. This is what we want. Now, if something can be negotiated and we can get a nominee that for the most part everybody agrees is pretty good, then you take it. Then you take it. Because again, the gamble of President Ted Cruz and keeping the Senate is a really big gamble. Now, these are my observations. They really are. Listen, that's why you're here. Because you don't want to listen to the same old tired guppity-gup, right? The Levin screaming and yelling. Be interesting to listen to Levin. Because he's Mr. Big Constitution. And the Constitution doesn't specifically say, hey, you gotta have. Gotta have the Supreme Court filled. You gotta have it. But it does reference that the president shall appoint. And for my fellow Republicans to just say it doesn't matter who is kind of against that sacred document that Mark Levin cherishes and bases his entire show off of. So you come here because the Levin Act is old. You come here because the Lamar Act is old. You come here because Laura Ingraham is just old. You want to hear a fresh take, a fresh perspective. You want to hear something different. You want to hear a new line of thinking, a new line of thought. Definitely different than Larry Elder, that lunatic. But these are my thoughts. Maybe they're wrong. Maybe they're wrong. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe the right way is tell the president to F himself. Tell him no matter who he gives as a nominee, they're never going to get a vote. They're never going to get a hearing. They're never going to get anything. Maybe that's the route. I don't see that being the route. I don't see it. I say we negotiate. If the negotiation doesn't look like it can happen, then we tell the president, go ahead, nominate whoever you want, and let us go through the process. Go through the process. Listen to what everybody has to say. The process takes 6 months. It takes 6 months. Everybody knows how long it takes for a Supreme Court justice to get through the nomination process. Let it get through. Unless this nominee is exactly how we want the replacement of Antonin Scalia, then that person loses the vote. It's been done before. And the people and the media won't have a conniption fit. They won't lose their minds. Won't be one more thing that we have to deal with. Let the process go through. Remember, we control the vote. Whether you need 60 or you need a simple majority. The chances, unless this nominee is Jesus, the chances of having five Republicans defect are slim to none. So right now, with a 54-44-2, 44-2. Senate, you're not going to get a nominee through unless they are Jesus. So let it play out. Let it play out. Why have this distraction? Why have this distraction? Listen to me. Here's my other opinion. The notion, and remember, listen, all of this could, this all could be wrong. This all could be wrong on Saturday. Saturday, we're going to know. And what I'm referencing is where the Republican electorate is. Because remember, up till now, we've been told the Republican electorate is a certain way. The general consensus is the Republican electorate loves Jesus, like loves him, like votes with their Bible first. They love George Bush. They love the Iraq War. They love Dick Cheney. These are the things that we're being told. These are the things that we're being told that all Republicans love. Now, if that's the case, then everything's going to change. Then everything's going to change come Saturday when South Carolina votes. But I don't feel that the Republican electorate has all these feelings that we're being told they all have. And one of those is the Supreme Court. Because certain people, certain pundits, are saying this is something that people like Ted Cruz can run on in this primary season and in the general election. The battle of who the next president will be and selecting a Supreme Court justice. And truthfully, I don't think that is something that the majority of the American people are going to base voting on. I don't believe the majority of the American people are going to go into that booth, whether it's a primary or it's a general, and say, forget the economy, forget our national security. Who's going to pick the next Supreme Court justice? Yes. It's all about that. I don't care if the unemployment rate goes up to 90%, I don't care if there's war in Florida. Forget the Middle East. I don't care if Florida it gets blown up. I don't care. I don't care. All I care about is the next Supreme Court justice. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I think more bad will come out of this prolonged obstructionist battle. I think more bad will come out of every single television station and every single news broadcast and every single newspaper and every single website blasting us because we aren't doing what is constitutionally, what they will keep saying. Oh, Ted Cruz, you like the Constitution also? You like the Constitution? Well, you're not doing, you're a conservative. You're not doing what the Constitution says. President has a duty. Now, you guys might not like who he picks, then you vote that person down. But to say you're not going to do it, no. Why do we need that? Why do we need that distraction? Why do we need that distraction? Let Congress do their job. Matter of fact, if you have the hearings, you actually would give an opportunity to Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio to question that nominee. You would actually give one golden boy, one not golden boy, the opportunity to sit there with the cameras on. Remember how wild it got for Clarence Thomas? You tell the president, go ahead and nominate whoever you want. Do it. Do it. We're not going to obstruct anything. Do it. He nominates who it is. They go through the process. The hearings are covered live. And you have Rubio and Cruz question that individual. Cruz and Rubio can be stars. They can be stars. Let the show play out. Let Democrats get what they want. But ultimately, the pot of gold is the confirmation, which they're not going to get. They're not going to get a 51 majority. It ain't going to happen. They're not going to pull five or six Republicans. It will not happen. And at the end of the day, the nominee will fail. Republicans won't look like bad guys. Rubio and Cruz were able to show how handsome and how articulate and how intelligent they are. And this whole process doesn't become a sub-story. So everybody in the media, everybody with a platform can just bash us. It's enough things they bash us on. We have to deal with this whole obstructionist thing, the don't follow Constitution thing. Don't do it. That's my opinion. I'm sure the masters will have a different take, the Limbus and the Levins and Pragers and Hewitts. But, hey, that's my opinion from little old